All right, remember, the machine knows if you're lying. First statement, Carvana will give you a real offer on your car all online.
False.
True, actually. You can sell your car in minutes.
False? That's gotta be...
True again. Carvana will pick up your car from your door, or you can drop it off at one of their car vending machines.
Sounds too good to be true, so true.
Finally caught on. Nice job. Honesty isn't just their policy, it's their entire model. Sell your car today, too.
Carvana.
Pickup fees may apply.
Okay, imagine this. There's a substance, right, that your own body makes. It can totally skyrocket your stamina. Hmm. It's a go-to treatment in some really serious diseases. But, and this is the key part, it's walking this super fine line. Get it wrong, and there are big risks.
Absolutely. It's a powerful thing.
We're talking about erythropoietin today. You know, EPO, and look, forget the headlines about athletes for just a second. This stuff impacts how our bodies fundamentally work day in, day out.
It really does. Its influence is quite remarkable.
So today's deep dive, we're going to crack open EPO. What is it? How does it actually work? The nuts and bolts.
Yeah, the mechanism.
Exactly. And its journey, you know, from the lab bench to actual treatments. Plus, we absolutely have to talk about the downside as the side effect.
That's critical. Yeah. Non-negotiable.
And we'll even touch on what some familiar voices in the health space might think about it. Think of this as your quick guide, your express route to getting the core info without getting totally bogged down.
And there's a lot to unpack. We've got info from its basic biology right through to how it affects health outcomes. Understanding the nuances is, well, it's everything here.
All right, let's dive in. Lay the groundwork. What is EPO in simple terms?
Okay, so erythropoietin EPO, at its core, it's a type of hormone. Specifically a glycoprotein hormone.
Glycoprotein, meaning?
Basically a protein with some sugar molecules attached. Think of it like a messenger molecule, its main gig. It acts as a growth factor.
A growth factor for what?
For the cells in your bone marrow that are basically destined to become red blood cells, the precursors. EPO tells them, okay, time to grow up and multiply.
So it kicks red blood cell production into high gear?
Precisely. Leads to a surge in them.
Okay, so the body's basically yelling, need more oxygen carriers now. What makes it send that signal? What's the trigger?
The main trigger is low oxygen levels. Your kidneys are constantly sensing the oxygen in your blood.
Ah, the kidneys are the sensors.
Exactly. So if oxygen levels drop, maybe you're at high altitude, or there's an underlying medical issue affecting oxygen transport, the kidneys notice and release EPO.
Got it. Body senses the shortage. Kidneys send out the EPO messenger. What happens when that message gets delivered?
Right. So the EPO travels through your bloodstream, makes its way to the bone marrow. There, it finds specific docking sites, receptors, on those red blood cell precursor cells.
Locks on, like a key in a lock.
Sort of, yeah. And that connection, that binding, it stimulates those cells to multiply and mature into fully functional red blood cells.
Yeah, and the end result.
More red blood cells circulating in your blood. Which means your blood can carry more oxygen to all your tissues and organs.
It's like you said before we started, like adding more delivery trucks for oxygen.
Exactly that analogy. Mm-hmm. More trucks mean better delivery, ensures everything gets the oxygen it needs for energy.
Makes total sense. Now, this understanding didn't just appear out of thin air, right? What did the early research actually involve?
No, it was a journey. Mm-hmm. It started with really fundamental preclinical research, lab work, animal studies.
Right.
These were absolutely essential to figure out EPO's basic job. Scientists used animal models, mostly rodents, like mice and rats.
And what did they see?
They saw that when they gave these animals EPO, their red blood cell counts went up, hemoglobin levels went up, and interestingly, these animals could exercise for much longer.
Ah, so the endurance link was there right from the start.
Absolutely. Rodents running longer on treadmills, that kind of thing. Very clear connection between EPO and physical stamina. Even back then.
You also hinted at something else in those early studies, something about the brain, nervous system.
Yes, that's a really fascinating kind of separate line of inquiry that came up in preclinical work. Some studies, again in animal models, suggested EPO might actually have neuroprotective qualities.
Protecting brain cells.
Potentially, yeah. And maybe even helping with regeneration after injury, like in models of stroke or neurological damage.
Wow, so not just red blood cells.
Exactly. It's distinct from its main job, but it opened up this whole other potential avenue for what EPO could do. Still being explored, mind you.
That's really interesting. Okay, so you have these promising animal studies. How did that translate into treatments for people?
Well, that success in the lab, the preclinical work, it really paved the way for human clinical trials.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the rigorous testing needed to see if something is safe and effective in humans.
A crucial step.
Absolutely. And one of the major breakthroughs from this phase was the development of something called recombinant human EPO, or AEPO.
Recombinant meaning lab-made.
Exactly. Lab-created, but designed to mimic the EPO your body naturally produces. And this RAE-EPO, it's become a cornerstone treatment for anemia.
Anemia, low red blood cells.
Right. Particularly the anemia you often see with chronic kidney disease.
Hmm.
Because remember, damaged kidneys don't produce enough natural EPO.
Ah, makes sense. So how did RAE-EPO change things for those patients?
Massively. Clinical trials showed again and again that RAE-EPO effectively raises hemoglobin levels in people with kidney disease-related anemia.
Which means?
Which means they need fewer blood transfusions. That's huge. Transfusions have risks. They're inconvenient. So reducing that need is a massive boost to quality of life, energy levels, everything.
A really profound impact then. Were there other conditions where EPO was tried out?
Oh, yes. Clinical trials looked at using EPO for anemia linked to other things, too.
Yeah.
Cancer chemotherapy, for instance, which can often suppress red blood cell production.
Right. Chemo side effects.
Exactly. Also, anemia related to HIV infection and even in premature infants who can be prone to anemia.
And the results? Generally positive.
Generally, yes. In many of these cases, EPO showed it could help increase red blood cell counts. But, and this is really important, these trials also hammered home the need for very careful dosing.
Why is that? Getting the dose wrong?
Getting the dose wrong or raising hemoglobin too quickly can lead to problems, side effects. So careful management is key.
Okay. And what about that neuroprotective angle? Did they test that in humans too?
They did. There have been clinical trials looking at whether EPO could help people after, say, a stroke. Trying to see if those preclinical hints about neuroprotection held up.
Man.
Honestly, the findings there have been less conclusive so far. It's still an area of research, but it hasn't become a standard treatment like it has for anemia.
Okay, so definitely a powerful tool for anemia, but clearly, as you said, not without potential issues. Let's really get into that now, the side effects.
Yeah.
Crucial conversation.
Yeah, it's absolutely essential. While EPO is life-saving for many, it carries risks. Especially if it's misused or if hemoglobin levels shoot up too high, too fast.
So what are the common things people might experience?
Some of the more frequent side effects include increased blood pressure, hypertension. That's quite common.
Okay.
People might also get flu-like symptoms, fever, chills, muscle aches, headaches and dizziness can happen too. And since it's usually injected.
Pain at the injection site.
Right. Some local irritation or pain is possible.
Those sound, you know, maybe manageable for a lot of people needing the treatment. But I suspect there are bigger concerns.
There are. The more serious side effects, though less common, are where the real dangers lie. A major one is the risk of blood clots, thromboembolic events.
Blood clots. Why does that happen?
If your red blood cell count gets too high, your blood literally gets thicker, more viscous.
Right.
And thicker blood is more prone to clotting.
Yeah.
These clots can cause serious problems. Deep vein thrombosis, DVT, in the legs. Pulmonary embolism, if a clot travels to the lungs.
Heart attack, stroke.
Heart attack, stroke, yes. The risk goes way up, especially if EPO is used to push red blood cell levels beyond the normal healthy range, what we call superphysiological levels, like in doping.
That's incredibly serious. Makes the misuse in sports seem even riskier.
It is extremely risky. But there are other serious, though less common, possibilities too. Seizures have been reported.
Wow.
And there's a very rare but severe condition called pure red cell aplasia, PRCA. That's where the body basically just stops making red blood cells altogether. It seems, in some rare cases, the body can develop antibodies against the recombinant EPO, shutting down production.
That sounds devastating.
It is. And one more critical point, especially relevant in cancer treatment. Some trials raised flags about a potential increased risk of tumor progression or maybe even decreased survival in certain cancer patients getting EPO for anemia.
So it could potentially make the cancer worse in some situations.
That's the concern in specific contexts. It really highlights why doctors have to do a very careful risk-benefit calculation when considering EPO for cancer-related anemia. It's not automatic.
These are definitely vital things for anyone dealing with EPO to know. Okay, let's shift gears a bit. We talked about maybe looking at this through the lens of some well-known voices in health and wellness. Andrew Huberman, Joe Rogan, Dr. Craig Conover. How might they view EPO based on what they usually talk about?
Yeah, and obviously we're inferring here, right? They might not have specific deep dives just on EPO, but based on their focuses. Let's take Andrew Huberman first.
Okay. Neuroscience, physiology.
Exactly. He talks a lot about oxygen, perform how the body works. So he'd almost certainly acknowledge the established medical uses, kidney disease, anemia, etc. That's solid science. But given his focus on evidence and, frankly, safety protocols, you'd expect him to issue strong cautions against using it for performance enhancement outside medical need. The cardiovascular risks we just talked about, he'd likely emphasize those heavily.
Right. Prioritizing long-term health over risky shortcuts. Seems like his approach. What about Joe Rogan? Performance-enhancing drugs come up a lot there.
Yeah, definitely. On Rogan's show, EPO would likely surface in those broader conversations about PEDs in sports, especially endurance sports.
Less focus on the clinical trial data, maybe.
Probably less on the nitty-gritty science, more on the real-world impact. The ethics, the health consequences for athletes caught using it, the cat-and-mouse game of detection and regulation.
So, anecdotes, expert guests talking about the sports controversies.
That seems likely. Focusing on how it impacts athletes, the controversies around it, rather than a deep dive into the mechanisms or clinical trials themselves.
Makes sense. And finally, Dr. Craig Conover. He works with peptides, optimizing physiology. How might he see EPO?
Well, EPO isn't a peptide, but its function boosting red blood cells definitely fits into that physiological optimization space he works in.
So he might be interested.
He'd likely focus on the legitimate medical uses first, treating diagnosed anemia. But given his emphasis on targeted, supervised interventions...
He wouldn't endorse off-label use?
Almost certainly not without strict medical necessity and oversight. He'd likely stress that messing with your red blood cell count isn't something to DIY. It needs careful monitoring because of those risks we discussed.
So it seems like a common thread, doesn't it? Acknowledge the medical wins, but serious warnings about stepping outside those lines.
Absolutely. The potential for harm with misuse is a consistent theme you'd expect from responsible voices.
Okay, so as we wrap up this deep dive, let's pull it together. What are the absolute key takeaways for you, the listener?
I think there are three main things. One, EPO is your body's natural signal to make more red blood cells, boosting oxygen capacity. Two, lab-made EPO, or HEPO, is a vital medical treatment for specific types of anemia, improving quality of life.
The third.
And the third, crucially, is that misusing EPO, especially chasing supraphysiological levels for performance, carries very serious risks. Blood clots, heart attack, stroke, and other severe complications. The risks are real and significant.
Absolutely. Understanding the science behind something this powerful is just so important for making informed choices about health, about well-being.
Mm-hmm.
So on that note, here's something for you to maybe chew on after this. We live in this age of information overload, right? Everyone's looking for an edge for self-optimization. How do we as individuals navigate this? How do we draw the line between responsibly using substances that affect our bodies profoundly, like EPO in a medical context, and potentially misusing them?
That's a tough question.
It is. How do we make sure that chasing quick fixes or perceived gains doesn't end up damaging our long-term health? Something to think about.